From KUER News in Salt Lake City, this is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. As a comedian, Larry Wilmore isn't opposed to making fun of certain parts of religious life. What he doesn't want to do is build the premise of the joke around a cliche. He says it's too limiting. So when he came to Utah recently to do a show that explored Mormonism, he tried to keep an open mind. The program, which he did for Showtime, wasn't just Wilmore doing stand-up. It included a panel and a discussion that, yes, was pretty funny, but also reflected Wilmore's own political sensibility. He calls himself a passionate centrist. "I'm not trying to prove anything for the right or the left," he said, "which gives me freedom to make jokes about both sides." Today in the program, Larry Wilmore is joining us to talk about what he learned from his experience in Utah, about Mormonism and race and sex, and what he made of Salt Lake City itself. Join us after the news. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. A couple of weeks ago, the writer, actor, comedian Larry Wilmore came to Salt Lake City to learn something about Mormonism. Wilmore has said that Mitt Romney's faith is as unique to him this election year as President Obama's blackness was in 2008. And really, he came here because he didn't know much about The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, and he wanted to gather material, not just for jokes, though that's clearly part of it, but also to understand how Mormons work through the issues of race and sex. That was the name of the special he produced for Showtime, Larry Wilmore's Race, Religion, and Sex. And the first thing he told the audience gathered at the Rose Wagner Performing Arts Center was that if they were voting for Mitt Romney just because he was Mormon, he was okay with it. In fact, he himself admitted that he voted for President Obama because he was black.
No, but seriously, I really believe this. I think if you're voting for the first, you should get a pass. You know, it was okay when Catholics voted for Kennedy. It was okay when women voted for Hillary because they were the first. I didn't have to agree with everything Obama stood for. Hope and change, that was for white people. You guys love that, man. You do. We don't need that, you know. We really don't, you know. People even now say, you know, "Hey, Larry, aren't you disappointed with Obama? Is he still black?"
Today in the program, we've asked Larry Wilmore to join us and talk about his experience in Salt Lake City, what he learned about the place itself, but also about Mormonism and race and sex. We invite you to join the conversation if you like. You can join us at 801-585-WEST, 801-585-9378. Our email address, radiowest@kuer.org. If you have comments or questions, maybe some of you were in the audience for Larry Wilmore's program. Larry Wilmore has worked in television as a producer, actor, comedian, writer for more than 30 years. He's written for television programs such as In Living Color and The Office. He won both an Emmy and a Peabody Award for his work on the Bernie Mac show. Many of you probably know him for his work on The Daily Show with Jon Stewart. He's the senior black correspondent. Larry Wilmore's recent special for Showtime's network I mentioned, and we'll give you more details about that as we go along. He's joining us today by phone from Los Angeles, California. Larry Wilmore, welcome. Thanks for doing this.
Thank you. It's nice to be here.
Well, I guess I wanted to start with the premise for the special. And the idea is, of course, as you pointed out in the show, that the idea is not to be centered in New York or Los Angeles. The idea is you wanted to travel and actually talk to people.
Right. When I pitched the idea to Showtime, actually the original title was simply Larry Wilmore Talks to America. And I'd always been fond of that Charles Kuralt Sunday morning show, you know.
Yeah.
Kind of like a travelogue part of it, you know. And I just felt a lot of the shows, especially the political shows, or political talk or even comedy, were, it just seemed to be a lot of Los Angeles and New York saying how America felt about things. And I thought, well, wouldn't it be great to actually go to America and ask the people themselves, you know, and make discoveries about different places, you know. So that's where the idea generated from.
Is that something you, is that in your character to go places and kind of learn things about, meet new people? Is that in your character?
Absolutely. I just love it, love it, love it. I love to travel. I love to meet new people. I like making discoveries, you know, and learning about new things. And to me, I like to generate my humor about discoveries that I make instead of the type of humor that I feel is we have an opinion and the joke is constantly just providing evidence for that opinion that you already have.
I wonder, you know, it's interesting you've talked about, I've heard you talk before about doing stand-up and some of the issues that you hear different comedians take on these days. And it seems like one of the things that seems to bother you is that it doesn't seem to be about real life, that it's just a lot of sort of pop cultural or cultural references, not a lot of like real stuff, I guess. Is that what is interesting to you or concerns you, I guess?
I don't know if it concerns me so much. I'm not like a comedy cop or policeman or that kind of thing, you know. I guess it may be kind of the things that interest me have always been people's lives, real lives. Like, I'm a real big reader of nonfiction over fiction, and it's funny because I'm a writer, and people say, well, who do you like? And I say, to be honest with you, I like real people. I love reading biographies and autobiographies and historical books. And one of my favorite books recently was A Manhunt, about the search for John Wilkes Booth. The assassination of Lincoln, I just found it fascinating. It just took you back to that time. And, you know, you could almost smell the grounds around D.C. and everything. And that kind of stuff always interests me. So going out into the country and meeting people and learning new things, that interests me a lot.
What was it? So I guess I get the idea that Mitt Romney, that was part of the reason to come to Utah, part of the interest
right.
in Mormonism. But was there something beyond that? Had you been thinking about Mormonism before?
Well, not in a broad sense. It was more specific, actually, because I do think it is unique. I think a few years ago, I think we would have been hard-pressed to think that the real religious conservative right would embrace a Mormon candidate.
Yeah.
I mean, they talked about it a lot themselves, you know, and a lot of people were concerned that he could ever even get the nomination, as qualified as he always appeared to be. It always seemed that the Mormon part of it might have been something holding him back.
Mm.
So I just thought that was an interesting thing, that the embrace of Romney as a candidate, Mormon notwithstanding, is kind of an interesting historical place that we're at right now. And I think it may coincide, now I may be wrong about this because I'm not a sociologist or anything, but it seems like Mormonism may be at a moment right now, too, and I think some writers have talked about this. And they seem to be having a kind of a global, I don't know if explosion is the right word, but certainly big growth, and I think people are becoming more aware of it in this country. One of the humorous things I wanted to touch on, we didn't talk about it too much, but I think the fact that it's such a new religion kind of turns people off. Like, I feel religions have to be a little rusty for people to accept some of the mysticism around it, you know? Like, the notion of Jesus turning water into wine, we don't question that much because it happened 2,000 years ago. You're like, well, okay, I guess miracles happened back then, you know?
Right.
But when you think of somebody doing something 150 years ago, it's like, are you kidding me? That's too recent. Nobody was doing miracles then, so I think there's something about it being such a new religion that kind of keeps people at arm's distance, you know, and let alone all the little parts of a religion that people may disagree or agree with.
Yeah. What did you know about Mormonism before you came here? Did you want to come kind of a blank slate?
I wasn't a complete blank slate, of course. I didn't know. I was surprised at how many black Mormons there were. Like Gladys Knight, I didn't know was a Mormon.
Yeah.
You guys have Mia Love, who's a black Mormon candidate running for Congress there. I wanted to have her on the show, actually. There's, you know, just all the celebrities who you find out are either Mormon or have Mormon connections. Those lists start expanding once you open up that door, you know. There were a lot of, I went to the meeting of the Genesis group headed by Don Harwell before we had him on the show. I just wanted to sit in and kind of feel what a Mormon, it was kind of like a Mormon service, I think, you know, it's kind of a support group too, but it was kind of interesting.
Larry, explain what the Genesis group is, maybe for people who don't know. It's
sure.
The
Genesis group is kind of a, I guess, I don't know if support group is the right word, let's say gathering.
Yeah.
Be a better word.
Right.
For African-American Mormons, and I guess their families and other people. It was a very mixed crowd. It wasn't just black. And I suppose it was started, you know, so people could find others like themselves who are kind of in that, in group where there's not many like them, as opposed to starting like that. But it's real interesting just to sit in on a religious kind of service like that. You know, it was very interesting.
What did you? One of the interesting dynamics of the show is that you don't really express. I have to say, a strong opinion. I mean, you really seem like you want to be objective. Like when you're talking to the panel, for example, which, and we'll play a few clips from that, but it seems like you really are interested in just sort of being in the middle and kind of moderating a conversation.
Yes, you're absolutely right. And one of the things that really interests me is I want people to feel safe to have their point of view without being attacked.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like let's attack positions but not people is kind of my point of view. So I want a passionate discussion about things, but let's not make it a personal attack on someone's character. You know, and to me, that way you can better understand the issues, you can better understand where someone's coming from. And many times, when you let someone really say their point of view, many times it may just reinforce your point of view.
Yeah.
But if you cancel them out immediately by, if you're on the left, you call the other side racist, why would you even listen to their argument if you think they're racist? Or on the right, if you think the left hates America, why are you going to listen to their argument if you automatically think that? Nothing they say can influence you in any way. So if you leave the personal attacks out of it and just listen to the point of view, you know, I think there's much more to be learned, and I think it's a better discussion.
Yeah. What did you hope to learn from, you know, from the experience? I mean, you wanted it to be funny, and we need to point out that it really is. But it seems like you also want it to be honest. You know, I mean, what is it that you were hoping to? I don't know. I guess you didn't think you would resolve anything, but
it's a really tough issue. One of the things I really wanted to accomplish, you know, and you're absolutely right. I wanted it to be. I mean, it's a comedy special for Showtime,
right?
You know, there's a certain requirement of funny that it has to meet, and entertaining, and all of those things. Otherwise, Showtime's not going to put it on, you know, or we won't get to do it again. So it definitely has to be that. So I use all my producer comedy writing skills for that. But as an individual who's interested in it, one of the things that I really wanted to accomplish was I wanted to make sure that the place was represented in the discussion.
Hmm.
So it was important for me to find people from the place or who had been from the place to participate in the discussion. One of the ideas that we had that we weren't able to quite pull off at the last minute was I wanted to just randomly pull someone from the audience to be part of the panel.
Yeah.
And if we do the special again, I'd love to try to do that. We just weren't able to do it for this one. But I think that would be fascinating for people to watch because you really do. I mean, the feeling of town hall really becomes, you know, really alive in that sense where just an ordinary Joe, ordinary Jane, just, you know, going about their business, gets to participate in the discussion. They're not running for office. They don't have an agenda, but we get to hear what's really important in their lives.
You know, it's interesting.
That to me would be a very powerful idea. So that kind of DNA, that feeling was what I wanted to accomplish in this thing.
I have to say, though, Don Harlow, you lucked out. You really lucked out with him because
I really did. You're absolutely right.
He was really honest. I mean, he said some things that, and we'll play a few moments of this a little bit later in the program.
Sure.
But he said some things that would, you know, are disturbing to people who support gay rights, for example.
Absolutely.
But the guy laid it on the line. You know, he was really he was just himself.
Well, one of the things that excited me about putting Don on the show was that he had the courage of his convictions without apology. And like I said, because he wasn't running for office or anything, he wasn't afraid to speak it. Now, when we did the show, it was a lot longer. The discussion went on for a long time, and I had to edit a lot of that.
Yeah.
And he didn't get a positive response all the time, you know. And but I wanted to make sure the show didn't look like we were bullying up on him or something
right.
like that. So, you know, I wanted to make sure he had his say as well as Jeff and Andrea and Troy as well. Like, everybody had a certain say in the show. So I tried to find a balance in it.
Yeah, I said Harlow. It's Harwell. Sorry, you said
Harwell,
that right. Yeah.
Yeah, it's Gene Harlow, Don Harwell.
Yeah, right. So the show really is built around, you say this in the monologue, this political philosophy that you have, which I guess in some ways is tongue-in-cheek, but you basically
right.
described it to the crowd as, I ain't mad at that.
Right. What that means to me is that I think, and I'm speaking for myself here, but I think a lot of times people are tired of having to take a position on everything.
Yeah.
You know, I think many people don't have a position on everything, or their position is so muddied or it's not clearly defined, that taking a stance on either side doesn't accurately define where they stand. You know, abortion is certainly one of those issues. You know, many people, of course, think abortion is horrible, but at the same time, they don't want to take that right away from a woman at that critical moment in her life to make that choice. So for them, they wouldn't say they're pro-abortion, but they might not say they're strictly pro-life either. They are maybe somewhere in the middle, you know. It's one of those tough issues to clearly define, you know. And there are many issues like that. And sometimes, in my comic point of view, too, sometimes you're just too tired to take a position,
yeah.
You know. I don't want to go on a march. I'm tired of all this, you know. You just want to worry about feeding your kids, getting them to school, you know. If you're going to have a job, those are the things you're interested in. You don't want to take a position on, you know, on global warming in the Arctic and how many polar bears are dying. It's like, I don't have time for that. I got to go to the store.
Yeah, you know? Yeah.
So that's part of my comic position, is exhaustion from having to take a stand all the time.
We should mention, for those who haven't had a chance to see the special yet, that part of what you did was actually, I mean, you spent 2.5 weeks here, and part of what you did is
right.
travel around the city. In one
yeah.
in one segment, you were dressed as a missionary.
Yeah.
You even had a companion. I guess he was a former LDS missionary?
Yes. He was a former LDS missionary, yes.
So I guess the question was, I mean, it's really funny, and you take on some of these kind of Mormon taboos, you know, it's about
sure.
sex and race and all that stuff, and you even make a reference, at least in this section, you know, to the Mormon temple garments, and
right.
I wonder, did you ever worry about, you know, what was the line I could cross? You know, I think going
right.
over a boundary seems an important part of comedy, but it seems like you're,
right.
you're very sensitive also to people's beliefs, so where did you figure the
That's
boundary was, you know?
Well, the boundary, Jeff Stilson, who was my exec producer in this, I've known Jeff for over 20 years, we kind of did stand-up together. It was important for me to choose a producer on this show who had the same point of view, where we weren't out to belittle or mock people, make fun of anything. We wanted to have respect, but we wanted to have fun with, as opposed to have fun at someone's expense, you know. So it was important for me to not make fun of Mormonism because, and by the way, those jokes are already done. They're already old. You know, calling it magic underwear, to me, it's not funny anymore because people have already said that.
Yeah.
How many times can you mock it? But I can have fun with talking about temple garments weren't made for our brothers in my which was a joke. You know, and that's having fun with the idea instead of making fun at it. So it's not my business to mock, you know, the tenets of someone's religious beliefs. That's why I talked about my Catholicism. We have some stuff that's kind of hard for people to wrap their minds around. So it's better to have fun with, I think, you know. And I think it's the purpose of this show is to do that. You know?
Yeah. Did the audience surprise you?
The audience really surprised me. Now, coming to Salt Lake, we first came in April, actually, just to scout a place to shoot. We looked at a lot of different places. One was a Masonic temple you guys had there. We thought about shooting it there.
Wow.
And we looked at the library. That was an idea. It just seemed too library-y. the Capitol Theater?
Yeah, Capitol Theater.
Big. When I saw the Rose Wagon, it just looked like the perfect space, and it had a lot of different accommodations about it. Jeff and I, we took that trip at the end of April, and immediately we got a sense that Salt Lake City was not quite what we were expecting.
Hmm.
It really seemed more of a purple dot around a sea of red, more than just more of a red dot on red, you know, which I think a lot of people's expectations are that, you know.
Yeah.
And it's very, very interesting. So we thought, oh, wow, this is great. We're going to make a lot of discoveries here for that would be good for a show. So.
Yeah, it's interesting listening to, and I know you probably edited a good part of this out, but you get a sense that people were, like I got a sense people were kind of yelling from the audience from time to time.
People were very passionate. And the sense that I got, hearing some people's comments afterwards, that I think a lot of the, let's say, progressive or maybe the left part of Salt Lake City, I think they felt like nobody ever wants to talk to them because they just assume all of Utah is one thing.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
So I think they felt like they hadn't had a voice yet to really speak, and a lot of them were just happy that I was there and finally had a chance to say something or have somebody pay attention to them. That's why it was, I don't know if this made it in the show, I can't remember, but when I think it might have been edited, but when we mentioned that the Advocate named Salt Lake City the gayest city in America. Now, I never would have guessed that.
Yeah.
Never in a thousand years, you know. And as I said, technically, it's the gayest unknown gay city.
Right.
You know, no one's ever going to dethrone San Francisco. That's just a fact.
Larry Wilmore is with us. He recently produced a special for Showtime called Larry Wilmore's Race, Religion, and Sex. It airs on the Showtime Network tomorrow across the country at 8 p.m. here in Utah, 10 p.m. Eastern. For details, visit our website, radiowest.kuer.org. You can join us if you like, 801-585-WEST, our email address, radiowest@kuer.org. We'll take a brief break. Back in a moment, you're listening to Radio West on KUER and Sirius XM Public Radio. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, the comedian, actor, writer Larry Wilmore is with us to offer his impressions about race, religion, sex in Salt Lake City. You may know Wilmore from his role as the senior black correspondent on The Daily Show with Jon Stewart. He was in Utah recently here to record a special for Showtime. His interest in the place was focused, of course, on Mormonism and Mitt Romney, so he gathered a crowd together when he was here to talk about Mormon values and ideas about race and gay rights. Larry Wilmore is joining us to talk about it, and you can join us if you like, 801-585-WEST, our email address, radiowest@kuer.org. So one of the things you talk about to the crowd there at the Rose Wagner was that you yourself were raised Catholic, and there's this moment in the special where you talk about the difference between Catholics and Mormons.
No, but I'm not here to bash the Mormon religion. I'm not. I'm actually Catholic. And see, as a Catholic, we're actually taught a lot of the same moral guidelines as you guys. The difference is you guys take it seriously. You do. You do. I mean, I guess if your prophet says something you don't agree with, doesn't matter, you're in lockstep, right? When the Pope says some crazy Catholics are like, oh, the Pope, he's so cute. What did he say? I don't know. I don't speak Latin. I mean, we feel towards the Pope the way England feels about the Queen. You know, just wave to us from a balcony once in a while and everybody's happy.
Larry Wilmore, do you think that's true in some ways, that, that Mormons are as a group kind of more devout, more committed?
Without a doubt, that is. I mean, it's so funny because, I mean, Catholicism, first of all, it's 2,000 years old. You can't keep up your intensity. It's too long, you know. I mean, I know so many Catholics who are, it's their relationship with Catholicism is so hilarious, you know, just the things will adopt or drop, you know. Just it's more of an a la carte religion at this point, you know. It's like, oh, I like that part. Okay, I'll listen to that. Nah, I don't care for that part. Eh, whatever. But at the same time, they still have a deep respect for the foundations of the religion and everything. It's just some of the rules are like, they're a little too ruley.
Yeah. Do you think that's where Mormonism over time is headed? Like all faiths tend to sort of not... You know what I mean?
Who knows? I mean, like, yeah. I said, it's so new, you know. Usually the first, you know, the beginnings of a religion are some of the most intense eras of those religions, you know. So, who knows?
Yeah. Let's talk about the panel part of the show. You invited the comedian and actor Jeff Garland to be on the program, the comedian Andrea Savage there. But then you had these two local people, Don Harwell and then Troy Williams, who's this local gay rights activist, who has intense relationship with Mormonism. Interesting relationship, right. I have to say, with Mormonism.
Yeah.
What the idea of Jeff and Andrea... I really liked them because they weren't just trying to crack wise. You know, they were really trying to engage in the conversation. I mean, they were funny, and I guess that's part of the point, but it really seemed like a conversation, a give and take.
Yeah, I mean, the actual taping, of course, was a lot crazier.
Yeah.
And Jeff was all over the place. I mean, he was getting up doing bits. I mean, he was just really funny. So we had to tame that down a little bit so it was more of a conversation, but... They were very entertaining and fun-spirited, you know. Even when it got passionate, Jeff he was really big about turning it around so it didn't overwhelm him how he felt about something. Like, he made a point to say that he liked Don because his wife seemed so nice. You know?
Right.
Had
right.
nothing to do with Don. It was only because of his wife. And that was funny, you know. But they were great. You know?
There's this section. I wanted to play another part of the panel because there's this part where you are. And it's a good long section here because I wanted people to get a sense of it. But there's this moment where you kind of ask the panel, is it fair to label the Mormon Church as racist just because of its racist
right.
past? Let's play a little section here so people can get a sense of that give and take.
I love this conversation, but something – I really want to ask this question of you, Don. Is it fair to label the church racist because they have a racist background? Like, is it fair to label them racist now because of their background?
Yes. Well earned.
Okay.
But at the same time, the rest of America was racist, too. The church does not have a history of lynching, but you can go to Texas at the same time. We were not allowed to hold the priesthood, and you get lynched.
But isn't there a difference? Like, in America, we had the civil rights marches. People saw the way blacks were treated on TV. Like, the Mormon religion, there was just kind of a revelation. You know, do you think people might be a little suspicious of that or something?
If you don't understand the religion, absolutely.
Uh-huh.
But if you understand the religion, no.
So do you think it's fair for us to be suspicious of it, though?
I think so. Mm-hmm. And I think it's great that they had this revelation. It was really a declaration more than mm-hmm. it was a revelation. But I've never, ever heard...
What's the difference?
Revelations are usually, thus saith the Lord unto my servant Thomas.
But that's how it came.
So, it wasn't written down like that. It was just a sort of a proclamation to the world.
So it's kind of like Jeff Garland giving a
revelation.
Well, yeah, I'm sure he had good ones, too.
Isn't a revelation where it suddenly occurs to you?
Yeah.
We're like, you know what? We've been racist.
That's not true.
Let's fix it.
But you know what? That's a good point, though.
That is not true.
That's almost a better point. To me, I'd almost feel better if they say, we f***ed up.
Well, that's what I was saying.
Exactly. That's exactly.
Gives you a sense of the given, and it was really dynamic. It seems like all of the conversations were really, they really seemed to work. Larry Wilmore,
great, yeah, yeah. You know, sometimes you get lucky and you find issues that either have passion embedded in it, or you find people who are passionate about the issues. You know, sometimes you get a combination. It seemed to me though that the racial question about the Mormon Church is an interesting one, but also the gay marriage question is just as interesting. And I think the racial question is a question that I think it seems to be moving on from, but I think the gay marriage question is one that's coming up. So I feel like we were kind of in a transition there with that moment. You know? But one of the comic things that I had, I think I mentioned on the show too, was like, I wanted to make the point that what American institution didn't have what I call a racist exploration date?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Even though the church was in 1978, baseball was 1945, you know, so basketball, we're just barely letting Asians in now, you know, a funny way of saying it, you know. But so I thought, I don't know if we can blame it for being racist like a lot of institutions, but where does the church go from there is maybe a better question.
What did you make of Don, for example, and those who have stayed with the church even before the days? This was in 1978, when the church allowed them to have the priesthood.
Right.
What did you make of people who were black and who could exist within an institution like that then and now? I guess.
Well, Don is a different situation. He chose the Mormon Church. He wasn't brought up in it, so. He chose it for whatever his personal reasons for, so he obviously didn't have a conflict with that. You know, Troy is a different story. Troy I found fascinating because he grew up in the Mormon Church, you know, and with his homosexuality, he had a conflict with the church, and his decision to stay in it I thought was a very powerful decision and a powerful story to tell of how to change by staying in a group and trying to affect the change by staying in it as opposed to leaving it and just criticizing it, being a critic from the outside. So they have both very different points of view on that whole thing. You know,
I've heard you talk about the fact that Larry Wilmore, you were a choir boy when you were a kid.
I was an altar boy.
Altar boy.
Yeah.
Was it a pretty religious upbringing for you?
I guess it was. I went to Catholic school, that sort of thing. But you know, it didn't seem too odd, I guess. When you're going to Catholic school to be an altar server, you know, what it really meant was when they had funerals and things like that, you got to get out of class. So I don't want to make it sound like it's real biased, you know. But I was very. I went to church every Sunday, even by myself if I had to, because I had to serve and all that stuff. So I was very interested in that sort of thing, you know, when I was growing up. But I always had a curiosity about religion itself, too, and not just a service attitude. I really had both.
You've described yourself as a natural contrarian, I think.
Right, exactly. Yeah, and I had that a lot with the Catholic Church, especially in high school. I became agnostic in college because I would fight with my teachers all the time in high school, asking questions that they couldn't answer, and I just had to follow it. And I was like, well, I don't think so, you know. And I just decided that I'm just going to have to acknowledge that I don't agree with some things, and that's just the way it is. You know?
Yeah. You went to Cal Poly, and you wanted to be, at least at first, you were thinking of being a scientist?
No. Only as a kid, I've always been interested in science. I still am. But I never thought of that as a career. I was always interested in showbiz. You just never know if you can do it. But I was a theater major. I was a theater arts major at Cal Poly. It was just what it was. It was an engineering school.
Yeah.
But it was a local school, which is why I went there.
Got it. But so the idea, but you thought of, so you studied theater. Was the idea... Was it acting that came first, or was it stand-up that came first?
Yeah, it was a combination of acting and stand-up. You know how you are in school. You're so idealistic. I really wanted to be that serious actor studying Shakespeare. I won an award in school doing Oedipus and that sort of
thing. Wow.
But, you know, I loved comedy. Even in high school, I did a lot of talent shows as a comedian. I used to sneak into the comedy store when I was underage and watch comedians, and I always dreamed of doing that. And so I kind of had that dual path of wanting to be an actor, but also wanting to be a comedian. So I started my career really strictly as a performer. In fact, I only wrote because I needed an act. It was more out of necessity. I never considered myself a writer. I just did it out of necessity.
There's this story that I read. I saw this fragment that referenced a story that I was dying to ask you about. Uh-huh. It was this story that your roof caved in when you were young?
Well, that was my clarifying moment, I guess you could say.
Yeah.
It was when my parents divorced, it was really tough on us. We really didn't have a lot of money, and my mom had a really tough time and nervous breakdown, those kinds of things, you know. And I think I was a senior in high school. The house was really kind of run down at the time. And I remember we had a really tough rain, and the roof literally caved in. I remember my mom's room. You could see the hole in it. And I remember standing there with my brother looking at it and just thinking, you know, I'm just not going to have this life, thinking I have to do something in my life that's going to bring me happiness and fulfillment was kind of the moment that I had.
Yeah.
And because I felt like my mom was kind of unhappy with her life, you know. So it was kind of that, you know, sometimes you're lucky and you have these moments where it just clarifies things. So at that moment, I was never afraid to go for what I really wanted to do and what was passionate for me, and I didn't care whether I made money or not. I just wanted to do it.
Well, your brother became a stand-up, and he's written, I guess he's writing now for...
He said he was a chicken. He did it because he saw me doing it. But once he thought you could do it, he started doing it. But he's funny in his own right. He writes for The Simpsons.
Yeah.
Written a lot of television as a performer, too.
So where did that comedy come... Was it funny at home at all? I mean, how did you guys become so funny?
Well, we used to, I don't know, who knows, you know, my parents were always funny, they just didn't know it, they were characters, you know, but my brother and I used to stay up late in our room trying to make each other laugh, you know, and like I said, there was a rough period when my parents were breaking up and fought a lot, and that time my brother and I put each other to sleep was making each other laugh, you know, pretty much, and we used to do impressions and that sort of thing, and I think it just started out of that, and I really had a love for comedy. I was a real television-aholic and comedy-aholic. Like, I've done a lot of, you know, the PBS shows talking about comedy because I soaked myself in it growing up. I just know so much about it, you know. And so, and that was just from watching all of that stuff. So I'm a big fan of it as well as love doing it. You know?
Well, this idea of the real world, I've heard you tell the story about there was a writer on a show that you were working on who kept pitching these jokes that were, you know, similar to the things they'd seen on other shows. Like, oh, I saw this on The Simpsons or Seinfeld did this thing.
Yeah, yeah.
And it really drove you nuts.
Yes, it did.
Talk about that.
Yeah, I may have said that in Mike Sachs's book. But, what drove me nuts is that he was so talented, this writer, you know, but he was a young writer. It was on the show, the PJs, that I did with Eddie Murphy.
Yeah.
And he would come up with very funny jokes, but a lot of his pitches were derivative, and meaning that they were based on something that had already been thought of, you know, something that had already been formed, you know, which is fine if you work for Apple, I guess, or Samsung.
Right.
You know, right? But I was like, I said, listen, I'm not going to say his name, but I said, I want to hear your stories. He said, pitch me stuff about things your grandfather did, you know, or observations you're currently making in your life. I said, that's the stuff that I want. I want to get that stuff out. When I did the Bernie Mac show, one of the things that that was fun in the show was Bernie and I used to have a conversation all the time about how hard it was raising kids and the heartbreak of it, because the show was really about the heartbreak of raising kids, not the difficulty, but the heartbreak.
Yeah.
And so we, because he had a really rough time growing up, his mother died when he was young, and I mean, all kinds of stuff that just broke your heart, you know. So we used to have these conversations all the time, because that's what the show was about. And it was out of these conversations that stories would come out of and those sorts of things, as opposed to just thinking of, oh, it would be funny if they had a birthday party and this would happen, which is a perfectly fine way to come up with stuff. But if you want to get a little deeper, you have to do a little bit of both. You have to investigate, you know, real life and then put the comedy around that, you know, or find a way to tell that story. So that's what I was so frustrated.
There's a friend of mine who talked about what it's like in a writer's room, or his sense of what it's like in a writer's room for a show. And, you know, there are different people.
We would get arrested so many times over for the language that we used and the subjects we talked about.
Well, what was the role? I mean, he talked about how everyone had a role. You know, you had someone who was kind of the smart guy. You had the clown.
Sure.
The person who dealt with structure and story. What was your role in the writer's room?
I guess it depended on the room. Sometimes I ran them because I was running the show. But usually, because I think I started in stand-up, I could be counted on for instant funny, you know, just coming up with something funny. So that was my thing. You know, I would make, you know, if it would be quiet for a while, I could say something that would break the ice and make it funny. You know? So that was something that I relished, especially when you're trying to get attention, you know, and you want to try to say something funny, that sort of thing. But, you know, when you're leading a room, it's a little different because you're thinking about story and you're really guiding and you're trying to, you know, babysitting, you're doing all kinds of things. So it's taking kind of a different role.
Larry Wilmore is with us. He recently produced a special for Showtime called Larry Wilmore's Race, Religion, and Sex. It airs on the Showtime Network tomorrow across the country. It's at 8 o'clock here in Utah, 10 p.m. Eastern. For details, visit our website, radiowest.kuer.org. We'll get back to the conversation about Salt Lake City and the special when we get back from a break. Back in a moment. You're listening to Radio West on KUER and Sirius XM Public Radio. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, we have with us the comedian, actor, writer, Larry Wilmore. He has produced a special for Showtime called Larry Wilmore's Race, Religion, and Sex. It's focused here in Salt Lake City. And he's joining us today by phone from Los Angeles, California. I wanted to ask you this question about... there's this section in the program where this idea of... I like the interplay because it's kind of passionate. The question is whether or not church leaders should apologize for the past.
Right.
Let me play this section. It's another section. I wanted to talk about it. Here's another section from Larry Wilmore's special for Showtime.
What would be more powerful than a revelation is an apology. When you are a young kid growing up in the Mormon church, they teach you about the R's of repentance. You have to recognize that you've sinned. You have to resolve and make restitution.
Right.
And part of that restitution is actually apologizing. And the church leaders could earn so much goodwill around the world if they would just step forward and say, yeah, we were racist, we made a mistake, and we love our black members.
The truth is, apologies, you got to get past waiting for apologies. Seriously, there have been so many cruelties and so many mistakes without any apologies. You've got to move on from that. As long as the future is corrected and better, that's great. But waiting on apologies is living in the past, I think.
Well, that's a very good point.
But if it's, your church is an institution, but if it's on your daily level and it's your family and it's what you've grown up with, I think he isn't looking for some huge apology. He's just going, yeah, we were wrong, and that's why we switched some stuff, and just in a personal level.
But for the church, it would be a huge apology. That's a giant thing for a corporation to take responsibility.
Why can't there be a symbolic apology?
It's exactly what it would be.
So
symbolic.
What? But you know,
even a symbolic apology, obviously, there is one difference between a micro apology and a macro apology.
Right.
You know, for a person, obviously, can't apologize for slavery, but an institution can certainly offer some kind of apology. Church is an institution, government is an institution. I think people don't mind when an institution does it, but naturally, no one expects you to walk up on the street and say, hey, man, sorry about slavery.
Larry Wilmore from his special that he produced for Showtime. So what did you think? Can you move on? Are you getting a sense that people are? We'll talk about gay rights here in a moment, but it seems like your sense of it is that the church and other people are moving on to some degree.
I suppose so. I don't know how big of an issue it is within the church right now. I did not get a sense of that because, of course, blacks who joined the Mormon Church, obviously that's not preventing them from joining. I haven't seen a lot about that 1978 revelation, so all that stuff is pretty interesting to me, so a lot of that was new, you know. I thought Troy made an interesting point, though, because I think apologies can mean something to certain people. Jeff's point was, I thought, interesting, too, where you have to move on, but his, I think, is more about, you know, your own emotional state and moving on with your life. I think Troy's was more about what it actually means to people. And I think that has to probably do with generations, too. Like, if you take slavery, for example, I think, like, America apologizing for slavery, I wrote about it in my book, actually, like the different ways they could apologize. But I think that means different things to different generations. An older generation that really grew up in Jim Crow and really experienced virulent racism, that apology obviously means a lot more to them than a generation where they really didn't experience the same thing. And it's this apology is more symbolic and, I guess, historical.
You asked this question in the show, and I get a sense you probably ask it from time to time. That is, what is the biggest issue in this country? Is it race? Is it religion? Is it sex? Talk about the response you got, and I wanted to get your sense of that question.
Well, it's interesting. Everybody chose religion except for Jeff, who chose sex.
Yeah.
He had kind of a comic take on it, you know. But I think he was serious, too. He feels sex is the reason that, I mean, the whole, I think his whole reasoning of why we have religion is to control sex.
Right.
I think he would say that. And he was saying how sex causes wars, and he made a joke about Martin Luther King, if he wasn't getting laid all the time, you know, he wouldn't have been able to lead the civil rights movement, and all these sorts of things. So that was kind of interesting. I had never heard anyone take it that far, you know. But sex definitely, I think, is a big issue for Americans. Religion certainly is, too. But I also think race has been for a long time and is as well. I think all three are on that third rail.
What do you think now? I mean, the idea was that with, you know, President Obama, there was supposed to be some sort of post-racial period in the country. Have you seen it? What do you think about that idea now during this election?
Well, I think to me, I like to make distinctions, you know, I like to separate things because many times things get conflated, and you have racial relations in the country, and then you have political races. And anytime you can use race and politics and you might win, go for it, right? I think that's how people feel, you know, whether you're using for or against. So race and politics is a different issue, in my mind, than racial relations in the country. You know, those are two different subjects. You know? And many times I think things get inflated hyperbolically, to make up a word, because you have a political race going on.
Yeah.
Or there are political opponents taking sides or digging in the ground in order to score points in order to win an election. blah, blah, blah.
Here's an email. It comes from Connor, who writes, do you think that using comedy and looking at some of the issues facing the country today in a humorous way is helping to bridge the divide the country's facing over politics and religion?
You never know. That would be great. That would be awesome. I hope so.
But you don't know. You don't have any.
I don't know.
You don't have any strong really opinion that we're going to bring everyone together.
I know that people appreciate it. I don't know if we can bring everyone together.
Yeah.
I think certain events do that. You know, 9/11, those type of big events bring us together for a while. But then, you know, we tend to drift apart again. But, you know, having division in the country is not a bad thing. It's what we do with that division. You know, a lot of good things come out because people have different points of view. I don't think we all need to think alike or have the same opinions. I think it's good that we have different opinions about things.
You were talking about, you know, what's the biggest issue. You said on the special that gay marriage really is the issue of our time. Is that the biggest issue, do you think, in the country right now?
I think it is the issue of our time, personally. That's just my personal opinion. Because I think homosexuality still is not understood by a lot of people for whatever reason. And the homosexual lifestyle, a lot of people rejected for a lot of different reasons, whether it's religious, moral, or whether it's just, you know, one of those knee-jerk reactions based on those things.
Yeah.
But I think a lot of it comes out of not understanding what the issue is. And I think the younger, every time we have a younger generation that is ain't mad at that, I guess.
Yeah.
There's more understanding for those sorts of things. My daughter, when she was in kindergarten, one of her friends had two moms, and that idea is not a foreign idea to her. So she doesn't have to fight against the type of cultural barriers to that thinking that I had when I was a kid, where it was really verboten to be homosexual or those sorts of things. I mean, people, remember in the 60s, people were arrested for being homosexual.
Yeah, yeah.
If you were in a nightclub and you're homosexual, you were arrested. I mean, that is amazing to me when you think about that.
Well, let me play another moment from the show. This is just a brief moment from the conversation about gay rights. And here Don Harwell is, he's pretty honest about his...
he was pretty raw about that.
Yeah. Let's play another moment.
I'm not in their house. What they do behind their walls is their business. I really believe that. But if you bring it to me, do I want to be involved in it? Do I believe in it? No, I
don't.
Well,
do you
no one's
be in
asking you to
or?
Go gay,
no,
man.
No one wants you to go sleep with a man.
That's good, because I ain't gonna.
But I'm attracted to you in a weird way.
I see a kiss coming.
You're the most attractive man I've
kiss?
Ever seen. I want to make love to you, my friend.
That ain't gonna happen.
Well, I thought that was really funny because it diffused a bit of the tension, because there was some that was a real moment in the show.
Right. Yeah, and we talked about civil rights and all that stuff. And I always thought that gay and black, I mean, I used to joke that they're not the same thing, because we don't have to come out of the closet. You know, Mom, Dad, I'm black. What? How long has this been going on? But I do think there are similarities in the two movements, and I always called it, we both share the invisibility cloak. And I always felt that blacks were invisible in society just because people didn't see them, you know, whereas homosexuals were invisible because they hid, you know, they're hiding out. And so it's a different type of invisibility, you know, and they both have different effects on individuals as well as groups, you know, but it certainly I share that type of thing.
Do you think, Larry, at the end of the evening there, did you figure you didn't resolve anything necessarily, but did you feel like you'd come to some kind of understanding about the way people were thinking?
That wasn't really the goal, to be honest with you. It was more just to have the conversation.
Sure.
Just have fun with it and all those sorts of things. There certainly wasn't any type of that type of trying to get an understanding or consensus. I just wanted people to be heard and have fun and all that kind of stuff. So, and I think that was accomplished.
Yeah.
And, you know, having a lot of fun with it, you know, certainly doing the choir at the end and that sort of thing and those tape bits that I did.
Right, which were really funny. Well, I was interested, you mentioned some Mormon doctrinal points that you had learned about the Mormons having three heavens and calling hell outer darkness. I wonder, did any of the ideas of Mormonism that you learned, anything about Mormonism... kind of resonate with you in some way or seem kind of interesting or appealing in some way?
Well, I would like to learn more about some of it. I still don't quite understand the whole celestial marriage thing where I'm not sure what the deal is with that, you know. And the fact that, you know, there's polygamy at the start of that, and how many wives do you end up with, and all that kind of stuff seems kind of confusing to me. And the heaven sounds pretty interesting, too. But, you know, in Catholicism, we had limbo and purgatory and all that kind of stuff.
Right.
Although I think we did away with limbo, which I don't understand how that works.
Right.
You know, so I guess the people in limbo really are in limbo right now. It doesn't even exist. So, yeah, those types of things are kind of interesting. And I saw the Book of Mormon on Broadway, which was hilarious, of course. And that was, I think, my interest first got piqued, you know, watching that in some of these things. And a lot of the hard kind of stuff I wanted to, I think I want to study up on some more.
Yeah.
Some more about it. I think it would be great, to be honest with you, if Romney did talk about some of his service as a bishop and that sort of thing. I think it would humanize him a lot more, and it would go along with people understanding more about, you know, where he's coming from.
Larry Wilmore, he's an Emmy Award-winning television personality, producer, writer. He recently produced a special for Showtime called Larry Wilmore's Race, Religion, and Sex. It airs on the Showtime Network tomorrow across the country. Visit our website for the particulars, radiowest.kuer.org. Larry Wilmore, thanks very much for the time.
Oh, it was my pleasure. Thanks for having me. I really enjoyed it.
Radio West, a production of KUER News. Technical direction today from Bob Nelson. Our thanks also to Michael Havey. Radio West is produced by Elaine Clark and Benjamin Bombard. I'm Doug Fabrizio.